Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode 45 of Pepperdine People. I'm Colleen Graffey, and I'm joined today by Ambassador Robert H. Tuttle. We were delighted to have Ambassador Tuttle join our School of Public Policy, Public Diplomacy in a Global Context course today. Ambassador Tuttle was ambassador to the Court of St. James, which is how we phrase the appointment to the United Kingdom. Ambassador Tuttle has an illustrious career, having graduated from Stanford University with an MBA from USC. He was assistant to President Reagan in 1982 and director of presidential personnel in 1985. Ambassador Tuttle, we talk about public diplomacy, which is how does a government communicate to the people of another country? Because diplomat to diplomat is important, but unless the people of a country are on board with a policy, then often a government is not able to enact that policy. You were really right there at the center of public diplomacy. What did you do in order to effectively communicate the American government's policies to the people of another country?
Well, obviously, Colleen, and thank you for having me. A big part of your job is dealing with the elites and with the Foreign Office and with Number 10. But I specifically had a three-pronged approach. Every opportunity I had, I went on TV or radio in the United Kingdom. I also did many print interviews. I think in my 3.5 years, about 200 TV and radio and print interviews. And then another thing that I did with my wife is we made over 60 trips throughout the United Kingdom, went to all the major population centers, and we'd do this, we'd call them a public diplomacy day. And I would speak with the Lord Mayor, the City Council, the Member of Parliament, if he or she were in the district. I would speak to the business leaders. I would go to the universities. We'd do cultural events. I would go to religious churches and mosques. And then I would talk with the local press, which I found when the ambassador visited a city like Manchester or Birmingham, it was a big deal and they really appreciated that. Third thing we did is really try to mobilize all the Foreign Service officers to encourage them to go out and speak. So we sent letters out to all the service clubs throughout London. We didn't have the budget for really anybody but the ambassador to travel, but we really got the Foreign Service officers out to speak throughout the London community.
And what did you have them speak on?
Obviously, the issues of the day, the Iraq war or climate change. But we even said to the Foreign Service officers, if you're a chess player, go speak to the chess club. Talk about that. One of our great strengths in America, of course, is our ability to communicate. And the English, of course, we learned a lot of that from our friends in England. So they like that. They like hearing Americans. And I think that's one of our great strengths is our ability to go out and talk and to be very frank with the people.
Now, I was there in London when you gave your first address to the community, which was for the pilgrims. And you were terrific. And how many years later, I still remember your opening joke. But you made it look very easy. But can you give us an idea of some of the training that takes place to be an ambassador?
There's a 2-week course, ambassadorial. It's called an ambassadorial seminar. And ambassadors, whether they be career or non-career, go through it. And I'm very pleased to say that they now include spouses, which they didn't years ago. The last 2 days of the 2 weeks, there was media training. And at the end of those 2 days, they had a professional media trainer. The trainer gave you a tape of your speech. You had to give a little speech and do a press conference. And when my wife and I looked at it, we said, we need more work. So I was then on the board of the Annenberg School of Communications, and I called the dean, who was a good friend of mine, and he set me up with a political consultant who also hired a speechwriter. And the speechwriter and the consultant and the technician spent 3 weekends with my wife and I doing media training, and it was invaluable. And then for this first speech that I gave, you mentioned the pilgrim speech, I went over every single word with the media trainer and my wife, so I was very, very comfortable. And it just happened that at the dinner table before the speech, they mentioned this story about cricket because England had just beaten Australia for the first time in many years and won the Ashes, which is a big trophy. And so I was, because I was so comfortable and so reasonably well-trained by that point, I was able to include that remark in my speech, which I'm glad to hear you still remember.
I do. And you were lauded in the press in London for your understanding of the culture and reaching out to people far and wide. But you also had an unusual collection that you brought to Winfield House, which attracted a lot of attention as well. Can you tell us about that?
My wife and I are collectors of modern contemporary art, and so we brought some of our own pieces. Plus, the United States has a wonderful program called Art in Embassies, and they encourage ambassadors to go out. And I had been chairman of an art museum, so we went to that museum and got a couple of wonderful Rothkos. We brought an Ellsworth Kelly piece from the Liechtenstein estate. We got a wonderful sculpture. One of our very philanthropic citizens, Eli Broad, gave me a wonderful Liechtenstein from the Whitney Museum. We got a Hopper. So we filled the house with modern and contemporary art. And I think it really made a big difference. We did an early reception for the art community. And I, even though at the time America was somewhat unpopular because of the Iraq War, I think they said, we'll take a second look at this ambassador because of his wife and his interest in cultural aspects. And it was a great benefit to us while we were there.
And, of course, one of the benefits of being ambassador is your beautiful residence. Winfield House, as I recall, has the second largest garden in the U.K.,
It's the second largest garden, private garden, second to Buckingham Palace. It was a wonderful gift that was given to the United States by Barbara Hutton, who built this house in the 30s and after the war returned to England and gave it to the U.S. government on the condition it be the residence of the ambassador. And I'm a little prejudiced, but I think it's the best ambassadorial residence that we have in the entire world.
I would agree. And I also note that you made full use of it, having received over 25,000 guests. Is that possible?
We had about 25,000 guests in the 3.5 years that we were there. We did receptions, small dinners, large dinners. Then, of course, July 4th, where we invited all the ambassadorial corps and prominent UK citizens. We did drinks parties. But it was a lot of fun, and it was also a way to expose culture, U.S. culture. We did we had a ballet in the residence. It's that big to have a small pas de deux one night. We had Merce Cunningham. We had Dave Brubeck. We did a reception for the famous artist Ellsworth Kelly. We had country western night. So the residence is a real tool for public diplomacy, and my wife and I used it that way.
You must have many memories from your time in London as ambassador. What is sort of one of the key memories that you take away?
Well, there's really nothing like presenting your credentials to the Queen. They arrive at the embassy, two carriages, horse-driven carriages are sent from Buckingham Palace to pick you up, and the head of the diplomatic corps picks you up. I was dressed in top hat and tails, and my wife had a beautiful dress. You get carried down to the Buckingham Palace. You go in a large room, and pretty soon the door opens, and you bow and then walk into the room, bow again. Then you walk up to the Queen, and I had about a 10 or 15 minute talk with her. Then I introduced her to two members of my staff, and then I introduced her to my wife. And each discussion's about 10 minutes, and so you're there about 20 or 30 minutes. And the Queen, who's just wonderful and so charming, at the end of it, she said, Mr. Ambassador, I understand that you and Mrs. Tuttle collect art. She said, would you like to see my collection? And I said, of course, Your Majesty. And she had her curator who took me and showed us her wonderful collection. It's hard to forget. And then when we came back to the embassy, we went back again in the carriage. And the weather had cleared up, and they took the top off the carriage. So we went up from Buckingham Palace back to the embassy in the carriage, waving and cheering crowds. It was very exciting.
It's wonderful. But I see that you are actually still engaged in public diplomacy now that you're back in the United States. Can you tell us something about your foundation where you're reaching out to young people in Britain?
Marie and I decided to set up a small foundation, and every year we pick students from low-income areas of the United Kingdom to travel to the United States for 2 weeks. We pick high school seniors and first-year freshmen half boys, half girls, and they come and spend a week in Vermont with other American students and students from the Middle East. And then for the second week, they go to Chicago, and they're housed with families. And during the day, they're all together and go see the sights in Chicago. And then when they come back to the United Kingdom, we usually try to go over in the fall, and they come and make a presentation to us about their trip to the United States. And what we're so grateful is so many of them have set up pen pals, or really, I guess, email pals with their friends they've made in the United States. And also the group themselves has communicated. So I think it's been very worthwhile. And we're delighted to be able to continue to do it.
Do you have any concluding words of advice for Pepperdine students who are thinking of going into government, and especially from your vantage as being head of presidential personnel?
You know, having served twice in government, one for President Reagan, one for President Bush, I don't think there's any higher calling than serving in government. And we have a wonderful system in America that allows people from the private sector. We have many more political appointments than do most democracies. And I would encourage everyone who has any interest in government to at some time in their life try to serve. Some people go into the civil service, and that's also wonderful. So I would encourage people to serve. We are the most important country in the world, and it's important that people of all walks of life serve in our government and take a little time to give back to their country, which has given so much to them.
Ambassador Tuttle, thank you very much for sharing your insights with Pepperdine people.
Thank you, Colleen.